So I'd like one of the panelists, one of the speakers, to say something about how the socialist movement envisages the transformation from capitalism to socialism, maybe the political transformation.
That's very good question. Now, how politically we can change from capitalism to socialism? For the start, it is very important to have the majority of socialists, because it's the only way to abolish capitalism. Because when we have the majority of socialism, for example, in this country, if we can send enough MPs to Westminster, at least we have at least one MP majority, we can pass the law and abolish all the capitalist establishments and let the socialists to take over on all the means of the production and redirect all the means of the production to produce for use. Of course, the members of the Socialist Party of Great Britain and its companion parties worldwide or in any country where they have the majority in the House of Power, when they pass the law to abolish capitalism, they will come home. They will come home. And they because at that time the government will not be necessary. However, the socialists will reorganize everything to fit the need of a socialist society. They will carry on to run hospital, school, food production, all those things. However, socialism is not here to take revenge. Now, when the socialists pass the law and abolish the government and let the people, and when the socialists take control, just for the start, the people will be free and they will have access to all the means of the production and information. They will produce new means of the production, but they will not make the law. It will not be necessary to make the law how to abolish money. There is no money. To make the law, to close the banks, or to take over property, to aggravate people. Socialism comes to construct, not to destroy. However, socialism comes to abolish all this money, banks, monies, private property, but not to take it over by power or by aggravation. However, they produce enough for use, not for sale. When there is enough, everyone has access to the necessity of life. No one needs money to go to buy or go to the bank or go to anything like that. So gradually the banks will close, money will become useless. Those millionaires or rich people, when they see they are not in a problem, they are as secure as anyone else, and also they will not bother about they will not be a problem for socialism, will not be a problem for them. Probably they will join to build socialism as emotionally and strongly as any other socialism. So that's how, that's my idea, of course, in a way that when the majority of the people become socialists and they change the system, they know how to do it, but that, as far as I see, that's the most logical and constructive way.
Now I'd like to ask everybody in the room a question. Can anybody stick around and tell me, with confidence, how many millions they think are in a billion? Now, does everybody know that? How many millions are in a billion?
Depends where you are. If you're in America,
I was confused already. There's a million millions in a billion.
In England.
Yeah, in England.
In Britain. I was looking at the defence expenditure in this country is going to be, for next year, 17 billion. That's 17 million millions. Now, when you weigh it up, the amount of resources, technology, labour power, and sheer energy, which goes into something which produces nothing but destructs a lot. It's got to be, you know, anybody in alien would look down and just, it's insane. But capitalism somehow conditions people to accept this. We've got to live in competition, yet nobody wants war. You've got to break through this sort of like gap. Now, socialists say, you can't break through that gap. You must stretch your hands overseas and unite. Not to live in competition with each other, but to live in harmony. We see society, well, we have a panoramic vision of a world society living in harmony. And it will be a harmonious society because people will consciously opt for it. Now, you must consciously opt to cooperate before socialism can function.
We all appreciate your comment, but you are supposed to be asking questions to the people here.
Yeah, it's a contribution, wasn't it? And all I'm saying to people is you've got to make the crucial choice. Do you want capitalism or are you going to participate? And that participation is essential. Don't expect leaders or follow the SWP or any other vanguard to do it for you. You've got to choose yourselves. And when you do choose, be glad you did, because we'll work for each other and together for a new society. It's possible, but you must choose yourself. Not kidding or anyone else.
I think basically only one question came out of that, and what's a billion? And of course, in economic terms, whenever the capitalists speak about billions and they're talking about pounds, in Great Britain it's common usage to use the American as a 1,000 as a billion. So the American would say $1 billion, they mean 1,000 million. And similarly, for banking concerns where each the capitalist uses large sums of money to buy and sell amongst itself, particularly the animals traders. You notice these figures have been used every other day. They do mean, in fact, 1,000 million, I think. But 17 billion is, whether it's 1,000,000,000 or 1,000,000,000, is still beyond our comprehension when we're looking at the £17 for a gyro check. £70 a month for rent. The position is simple, clear. For workers, we have no conception of £17,000 in most instances, let alone £17 billion, which the capitalists have ownership and control over. For socialists, the answer is to abolish the whole of the system of society, which puts a small minority in ownership of these great vast sums of wealth and animals, and a great majority enslaved to work for wages.
When he was speaking earlier, made reference to this forthcoming conference in Liverpool, and quoted in some things relating to it. And they obviously had a muddled idea of socialism. And the meeting that's coming is apparently called the Vision of Socialism. Is it his opinion that these people have any idea of socialism at all, even a muddled one, at this late stage?
The position is quite simple. The name of the meeting, I don't want to contradict it, it's called the Socialist Vision. I mean, I don't know exactly which conference hall, I think it's yet to be released, exactly where they're going to have a venue in Liverpool sometime next month. My friend asks, do they have any conception of what socialism is at all? Well, the answer is simple, they do. But their socialism is not what we're talking about. For them, socialism means state control in very different forms. Sometimes the outright Leninist viewpoint exists in the Labour Party and Communist Party. Is that the state will dictate basically
to the proletariat how to run their lives. And of course, when you have a state in control with state ownership, you still have the distinct relationship, which is capitalist one. That is to say, there's capital owned by a small minority, and those who work for wages, the wage labourers. This distinction between capital and wage labour is the most obvious fundamental factor, which is used as the acid test, for example, to let you know if capitalism is in existence anywhere in the world. So what they call socialism is, of course, a system of society, which is capital owned by a small minority, in this case the state, and then the workers enslaved to wages, the wage labourers. So there is capitalism in the society they're talking about. So therefore, if we're talking about a different kettle of fish, socialism, which we call common ownership of the means of producing and distributing wealth, they're obviously not talking about that. But for them, if that is socialism, then that's definitely not which Marxists have been pointing out for the last 200 years, and it's not what the Socialist Party of Great Britain is about. The Socialist Party of Great Britain is about common ownership of means of production. And of course, if that for you is socialism, then that is definitely not what their socialist vision is about.
On to say, by definition, socialism must be a different society from capitalism. That's to say, if you look everywhere in the world, all you've got to do is look from your own experience. What exists there? Wage labour, workers, those who own property, and those who do not. And if someone turns around to you and says, that is socialism, you've got to say, look, what exists in the Soviet Union doesn't look very different to me from what exists over here. And what exists over here doesn't look very different from what exists in East Germany. This kind of relationship, what they've actually tried to do is actually say that this relationship is different. When if you use your own experience, you can see that the actual basis of society, the fundamental characteristics of that society, are absolutely similar, are identical. And it's the characteristics which attain to every 152 countries in this world.
It was the one right at the back,
Mr. Jolte, and then... America is a country of some 250 million people, and I think it's quite well known that they feed a considerable portion of the world's population. But I'm informed that the number of workers who work on the land in America is less than 2 million. In view of this fact, and in view of a legion of other facts which point to the possibilities for mechanised farming, do the speakers see food production as a major problem for an emerging socialist society?
No, actually, now, today, practically, there is not any shortage of food product. But the problem, what is it, you know? The problem is you have to buy. As you said, you know, in America, they have the capacity, you know, to feed worldwide, just to produce food in America. Because, you know, they have a scientific knowledge and they have all the necessary tools. In socialism, actually, you know, today, you know, suppose, you know, tomorrow, you know, we work a bit of socialism. Actually, there is, you know, there will be plenty of food. Without, you know, any change, without any change in the system of the production of food. But the problem, over 80% of Indian people, they haven't money. And don't mention, you know, they haven't money to buy food. Why? Because, you know, there is no one. Because in India, you have, you know, capitalism. And capitalism is regulated in order to serve the ruling minority, the ruling capitalist minority of India. Now, in China, you have nearly 1,000 million people. Now in China, it's the rule. You have a state capitalism, it's the rule, you must work. If you don't work, the government will find you work and you have to do it. If you don't work, If you refuse it, the government take you to the court. To the court. Now, because of that, in China, you have China, India has more technicians than China. India 500 million, but China 1,000 million. And China has less expertise than India, probably half of India, something like that. But China, they have, you know, every one of Chinese people, at least, you know, they have food, they have house. However, you know, it's not a condition of wage slavery. But they are not as poor as India, as the Indian people, as the Indian people. And bearing in mind, again, in China, they use the primitive method of some 3,000 years ago. They used to produce food. They use their hand to plant the ground. They irrigate the land by transporting water on their back. But still there is, you know, still they can produce enough for themselves. So actually, now, if tomorrow you look at it as socialism, of course it is not like that, it will not be like that, but there will, you know, there will, suddenly, you know, the amount of the production will be increased by thousands of times, because, you know, everywhere there will be no law, everywhere start to work, and especially poor people like India, Latin America, you know, all those people, all they start to work, and they have a little information, a little scientific knowledge, you know, or they start work and using this little scientific work, you know, they produce, you know, that's, you know, don't worry about.
If I can just add something to that, you mentioned figure I was unaware of, that less than 2 million people in North America are involved directly in agricultural work. It's an interesting fact to lay alongside that. According to a figure produced last year by the Federal Bureau of Information in America, there are between 10 and 12 million people living in North America who are suffering from malnourishment or serious malnourishment or malnourishment-related diseases. Go just back to the billions for a moment. The population, according to the United Nations of the world, is currently estimated at about 4.2 billion. And the question must arise, with millions of people all over the globe seriously malnourished, how easy is that problem going to be to solve quickly as soon as socialism begins to be implemented globally? And I think that a good starting point to work out that sort of problem is to realise that socialism is not a solution in itself, but it's like capitalism, it's a means of solving problems. The problems that human beings will always have is the provision of food, drink, clothing, shelter, entertainment and so on. Capitalism is a social system which seeks to solve those problems, but for the majority of people it's a very inefficient and dangerous and injurious system, but it, nevertheless, it's trying to solve problems. Socialism will go about solving those problems on the basis of need, producing and distributing wealth according to human beings' self-determined need. And how easy that's going to be to shift quickly from a priority of profit to a priority of human need is an interesting question. There are various members and committees of the Socialist Party of Great Britain who have for some time been engaged in research on precisely that matter, on getting information together about how, on what sort of basis, locally, regionally, and what are currently territories now termed as nations and that sort of area, how food production could best be organised quickly, because there would have to be different priorities given to the short-term satisfaction of dire needs than there would be after a certain period of the establishment of socialism. But to look at some of the evidence that's available in capitalism, to see what you can glean from that about how we would be able to cope with the initial stages of satisfying people's needs, I think there are certain things that need looking at. First of all, earlier I mentioned about food surpluses, and I was trying to make the point that although, of course, it's a horror story in itself to see millions of people starving to death in front of our eyes while there are food surpluses, so-called, and lakes of wine and mountains of beef, that only represents a very small portion of what we are capable of producing. In other words, it's the irrigatable land, that's the correct expression, that's currently guarded and not farmed at all, because it would be unprofitable to do that, that socialists would be turning to. But one other point that I think is relevant is the degree to which production can suddenly be boosted, even within capitalism, where there is seen to be a need. Now, it's a horrible irony of the priorities of this social system that the most urgent needs in capitalism centre around things like war, the need for, you know, killing the most people and making the biggest effort to try and get the machinery of destruction together. So when something like the Falklands War crops up, you've got people working around the clock and all sorts of extremely efficient systems of work being devised and implemented for, you know, a horrifically antisocial purpose of killing people. But it shows what human capacities there are, completely untapped. And it's, you know, ships being built night and day and that sort of thing, and production put into top gear. And that's the sort of evidence that I think we have to look closely to. I mean, this is one of my fields, so I'm not, in that sense, a good person to ask about the details of it. But from the evidence that I am aware of, and the knowledge that I'm aware other people possess on this matter, socialists, there is a great deal of evidence to suggest that the short answer to the question is, although it would be difficult, obviously it'll be massively more socially satisfying than anything that capitalism can produce.
Jim.
Can I introduce, you had your hand I'll
ask a question about because it's state capitalism, the idea of a small minority of people determining, you know, what's best for us, the rest of the population. What worries me, human beings are not perfect. I mean, I believe that there are some essential goods available, but we're all perceptually selfish. How would you safeguard against the idea of state capitalism? As soon as people start to disagree, start to cooperate, it's a tendency of organising people.
That's a very easy answer. First, I'd like to just point out to anybody who may not have understood what I meant by state capitalism. Those of you who have understood it first time, it may be a bit boring. We have different social systems in this world of ours, which can be described as one where a small minority are obviously in power in the so-called Eastern Bloc, and another form where you don't see the ruling elite and they're not quite so obvious in the Western Bloc. Now, in the Western form of governing and administering capitalism, you find Western propaganda is that control over the interests of the nations is in the hands of the voters. Now, whilst the voters in the Western bloc have served up various propaganda to say that governments are about to act in their interests once they come into power, the real fact of the matter is that governments are there mainly to conserve the interests of the ruling classes in these particular areas. So when you find governments in Great Britain, America, or what have you, in the Western areas, you find they're dictated to by the International Monetary Fund or the varying banks of their particular spheres or nations, you find these banks are owned by small minorities of private capitalists whose interests are expressed via the government. The governments have to behave as the banks would dictate them in effect. When you are asked to vote for them, the varying different capitalist ideas are asking the workers to back them up, so to give more pressure to their ideas in government, and so that each different faction or capitalist interest has to be met by the governments and is expressed by the amount of people who are behind this particular ideology. Of course, the ideologies of the Labour Party are very similar. For example, the Conservative Party at the moment follow a particular monetarist policy that they keep telling us every day in our televisions is the road to the promised land, and it's going to cut inflation or whatever, which they call M3. And they point out to Milton Friedman as their guru and great deliverance from this guy, the second coming. Of course, if you notice, just prior to 1979, Milton Friedman was visiting James Callaghan, and the Labour Party was about to follow this same policy, as the old ruling economies had given up listening to the ideas of John Maynard Keynes. If I can just continue, Comrade Chairman, just say the difference then in the Eastern Bloc is that the state administers capitalism for the interests of those in the small elite ruling body, which they call the party. The party lives in privilege. The party are those and their families who are picked to live in the embassies of the world. The party are those who go to the best schools, who end up the fittest, who via their influence go to the best seats at Olympic Games in America. But of course, we're obviously realising they won't be going this year. But other varying events around the world, members of the party and their families get along to these type of events. You have a small privileged elite in both these spheres, and basically they act no real difference. They act to administer the interests of capitalists, which is to exploit the working class, and as a class they do it. But as a class they have different interests. And so you find capitalism is a ruling society, or the ruling society which runs our lives for us and dictates how we should behave, whether it is a state run or private run. Now, my friend here says that humans are not perfect, and to get to a socialist society, their imperfections is going to be some kind of hindrance. Now, of course, I don't know what these imperfections are. Perhaps these imperfections are that you can't keep a job, and because you've worked too hard at work, you're put onto the dole queue. When the private capitalist or the state capitalist find you no longer capable of producing him a profit, this is when you feel at your worst and most imperfect. This is when you feel that you're incapable of looking after your families. This is when you feel you're most downtrodden, and of course, that your imperfections show up at your worst. There are different reactions of different workers who have committed suicide and fought amongst their families whilst on the dole queue. 3 million in this country, that's about nearer 10 million in America. I don't know the exact figures. And, of course, no figures are released for the state capitalist societies across the world. But, of course, you must realise that the position of workers, wherever they are in the world, is the same. You don't get to work at 8 o'clock in the morning and stay till 5 o'clock in the evening, you're of no use to the capitalist. And whether it's a state capitalist or a private capitalist, you're in the scrap heap. Of course, workers in Russia who don't collect unemployment benefit are more inclined to get up at 8 o'clock in the morning. So these imperfections that we're told is going to hinder the day of socialist society can in fact be the useful tool that we have got to overcome, to realise, come overcome our inhibitions, to express ourselves and overcome the inhibitions that make us feel inferior in some way, and realise that we are the class who produce all the world's wealth. We are the class who, by our acquiescence, keep the ruling class, wherever they may be, in the state or the private ones. We are the class who produce all their privilege and keeps them in this position. And how do we safeguard, my friends, against these imperfections? Of course, the imperfections I was not talking about is, of course, cross eyes or something like that, or being born with spina bifida, which, of course, the imperfections, the very obvious ones, have varying degrees of come from varying degrees of ill health, which is the position of the working class. So there's no safeguard. The real issue is how do we harbour the mass descent of working class people, as we see a great proportion of them fail to register to vote, a great proportion of them think their lives are a misery and a dole queue, and a great proportion of them do varying things for the upkeep of capitalism, which is not in their interest.
And also, about contribution to that last point you made, I would actually ask you and say that consciousness is the key, because
You see, the preconditions that exist for the establishment of socialism completely eliminate any ideas about drifting back into some kind of capitalism or some kind of state capitalism. I mean, if you think about it, a majority of people have organised themselves and have, you know, made sacrifices to actually put into operation a different kind of society. Now, they're not, at the first problem they confront, fall back into society that they've organised to get rid of. You know, I know from the people, I can only say from the people that aren't our socialists, that you come across a problem, you overcome it. Doesn't mean that we actually say we can actually fall back and become propagandists for capitalism. And that was the basic answer. And if you want to come back on it, you can come back on it.
I think perhaps if I can rephrase it, what I'm trying to get at is, if you're trying to instigate socialism on a world scale, what you said, how are you going to prevent the danger of the party existing? You haven't yet explained to me anyway, perhaps I've missed something, how are you going to instigate world socialism?
Do you want anybody to play down to that?
Whoever's
not on
there. Well, capitalism itself has actually set up a lot of the international organisations which socialists could easily use to administer socialism. I mean, we know there's organisations of that kind that already exist. Whether we actually use those organisations is up to us at the time. But there's no real great problem, as I see it. I mean, if we're talking about the administration side, these organisations exist. They don't exist. We can invent them, in a socialist society. There'd be no big problem, because socialists will exist in those other countries. It won't be a matter of actually fighting these other socialists in order to actually get cooperation, because they will be, obviously, in a harmonious views with our views. And the bodies that will need to exist to actually distribute wealth and coordinate wealth, can be set up if they need to.
Can I just have a couple of points to that? One is this, that those sort of organisations like the International Post Office system, you can post a letter in King's Cross and it arrives in Hong Kong, Beirut, Sydney, a few days later. That involves a highly integrated and sophisticated system of human endeavour across the globe. And it's things like that, and the international 24-hour-a-day air service and so on, and international trade union organisations, which provide a foundation, at least, of organisational communications which have been set up in capitalism. But I think the other angle to the question you're asking is to do with the making of socialists around the world. And one point we would make here is that because socialism is an idea put into our heads by capitalism, it arises from our material condition and our environment, it's being produced in the minds of people who are becoming socialists all over the world. So really, the Socialist Party based in Britain is just one aspect of something which is happening globally. So it's not really a question of us having any sway over the whole world. There are parties linked to the Socialist Party based in Britain in many other countries who are putting forward, possibly this evening, possibly not, I don't know, but you see what I mean? They're putting forward these ideas all over the place, and that's the nature of socialism arising out of capitalism on a global scale.